Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast, number 74, for August 12th, Wednesday, August 12th. And next week is our big, giant 75th podcast.
I feel like that makes this podcast more special just by its very presence, its proximity.
In a way, it's penultimate.
That's right. It's the penultimate podcast.
Of course, after...
It's alliterative.
After 75, 76 will be just a big disappointment.
Yes.
Because it'll go back to normal. Just normal.
That's when we drop the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. That's how it is. But anyway, yes, next week will be a big big special podcast with we're going to run down our top 10 Secret Wars picks. We're going to run – we're going to have a guest appearances from everyone who's worked at Rogues pretty much.
Yep.
It should be – it'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be as good as the 76 one will be bad.
It'll be bad.
You're setting us up for failure.
Exactly right. But then when we're actually – exactly as mediocre as usual, it's going to seem amazing to people.
Should we just do that every time? So it's amazing every time?
We'll always do the setup.
Oh, I thought you meant mediocre every time. And I'm like, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. All right. So this time, quick housekeeping before we head in. Gaming with Rogues is next Monday on August 17th. It's going to be at Kirby Lane, and they are playing Red Dragon Inn this time. Then in September 8th, we will have our Reading with Rogues. We've decided we're going to do Lazarus, the Image comic set in sort of a dystopian future by Greg Rucka and Michael Lark. Michael Lark, right?
It is Michael Lark.
And we're going to do kind of what we did with Rat Queens, where it'll be either you can buy the trade pair, the volume one and two trades, or the hardcover, which has both of those, or just volume one if you want to get part of it. But we're going to talk the first two trades because there's a lot of story in there.
Right. And Rucka has a sort of deliberate pacing.
Yeah.
You're going to get some really great payoff if you can manage to do both trades.
Yeah, it's or especially the hardcover. The hardcover has those cool extras. Yeah,
really
stuff about the world, little encyclopedia type stuff.
Sexy.
It's very cool. I think we all have it.
Yep.
All right, and then Batman Day is September 26th. Every year there is this big expectation of what do you do for Batman Day? This is basically just DC's marketing gimmick that we go along with, but there will be a anybody who buys anything will get a free Batman that's going to have the start of the Endgame story, a teaser for Batman and Robin Eternal. We'll do a sale on Batman merchandise. We might do some other stuff. We might have some cosplayers if we can work that out. We might do a demo of Batman Flux.
But we will not, for instance, have transformed the store into the Batcave.
We will not. Alfred will not greet you as you come in that day.
Dude, if one of us could dress up as Alfred and just be standing there with a tray in front of the door all day.
Comics for you, sir. We won't be bringing in a giant video game console and doing death matches of Batman Arkham Knight. None of that stuff. It's not that we don't want to. It's just that we don't have the budget for that kind of thing.
Right.
Sorry.
So Batman Day will be a chill Batman Day.
It'll be a chill Batman Day. It's not Free Comic Book Day.
Right.
Just lowering expectations to reasonable. You under-promise and over-deliver. That's what we're doing here.
I mean, the tricky thing about this is that Batman is such a big hero.
Mm-hmm.
People hear Batman Day, and they assume they're going to walk in, and there will be a float approaching them.
Yep.
A Batman blimp in the store somehow.
Sort of like from... Tim Burton's
Batman. He stole my balloons.
I believe next year we're just going to change it. It'll be Nightwing Day because people know Nightwing Day lower your expectations.
That's right.
And then that Sunday, September 27th, will be Magic the Gathering Battle for Zendikar pre-release.
Didn't we just do a pre-release?
We did, and it's every 3 months. Yeah.
Man.
I know. And then there's a bunch of news. Most of it TV news, so we're going to start off with the TV news. First of all, the casting for Flash and Arrow is ramping up because they are done filming, probably, or at least done filming their first half, because it premieres in September, right?
Yep. They've already done a few episodes.
Yeah. So they have announced their Kid Flash is going to be Kenan Lonsdale, who you might know from the movie Insurgent. I don't, but...
I saw Insurgent, but I don't remember.
Most notable maybe is that they are going with sort of the mixed race, or maybe even just black... Kid Flash.
That's the New 52 incarnation.
Which is the New 52 incarnation.
I've not kept up with Flash, so I knew of this, but that's about all I know.
Well, what I don't know for sure, and I don't think they've announced, is whether and how this is going to relate. Because in the comics, Kid Flash is Iris's nephew, Wally West.
Yeah.
And he is named Wally West, but, I mean, unless there's... I mean, it is possible to have a weird, you know, like, have a nephew who's a teenager even though you're in your 20s. But that would mean that Iris has a brother or sister that has a kid that's in their 20s.
But for all we know, he could be from one of the alternate timelines.
I was going to say, alternate timeline.
Could do that. Could be a cousin.
Future.
Could be future Bart Allen type thing. Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing them. I'm glad they're bringing in Kid Flash.
I mean, at this point, the Flash creators and showrunners could say they're doing the wonkiest thing I've ever heard of, and I have faith in them to deliver on
the
that.
Turtle, the slowest man alive.
Sure, do it. I'm sure it'll be good.
He uses quantum mechanics to slow time in a bubble around him. I think this, by the way, is a good example of both DC and their show of when you are reintroducing characters, perfect time to shake things up a little bit with a bit more diversity.
Yep. Speaking of diversity, they have announced that Mr. Terrific will be an openly gay character on Arrow.
It's interesting.
Which I believe they said, I think they said the specific wording was it's the first openly gay black character on. I mean, it's
very specific.
It's not first openly gay because they have the captain from Flash, and I think there's probably an openly gay character. But yeah, that Mr. Terrific will be gay, which is a change for the character. He's usually kind of a horn dog.
Right.
But it makes a certain amount of sense.
Was he back in the JSA days, or is that a New 52 thing?
That's a New 52 thing.
Because he was JSA kind of days, a player.
Yeah, well, in the JSA days, he did date. I think he dated some of the. I don't know if he dated Power Girl, but he dated some of the characters.
Definitely dated Power Girl in the new one.
Yeah, he did.
But I mean, also he was previously married and all that stuff. So this is a change that I think is a good change.
Not that I assume that the only two gay characters on the show are going to hook up, but maybe he should hook up with the captain.
Well, the captain's married, dude.
Drama. Hello. Do you want drama or not?
But Mr. Terrific is going to be on Arrow, right? Not Flash?
Yes, correct. Although I always assume any of these guys they're casting might show up on either one.
Well, that's true.
Because there's so much crossover, especially if it's superpower stuff, that all these guys may show up on Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow. Who knows?
Yep. But none of these will show up on Supergirl.
No.
In the comics, traditionally himself does not have superpowers. He's like Batman with gadget, with like even more sort of high tech.
Actually, he does have a superpower.
Oh, what's his superpower?
He is invisible to technology.
Yep. Oh, that's right. Is that something he was born with?
Yes, some kind of thing he was born with.
And he has his little T-spheres.
Right,
but those are inventions.
I know,
but power wise, that's actually a power. It's not technology that he's invisible, right?
I believe that's correct.
Although I'm sure I suspect on the show they would probably go with it's technologically based.
Well, or that he got it when the thing happened.
Yeah, the wave,
the Flash wave. Yes. Yeah. Okay, switching gears over to Marvel. They have announced that Agent Carter has her nemesis for this, or at least one of the bad guys, and it's Madame Mask.
Which. I was hoping to see in some capacity.
That is super cool. Madame Mask is a cool Iron Man villain. She's got an interesting thing where she's a bit of a personality split. She's the daughter of a crime lord. She's she has a romantic relationship with Tony. It's a bummer to lose her from Stark, but it wouldn't make sense with the Stark who's sort of hooked up with Pepper.
But it would totally make sense for Stark's dad.
Yes, for Howard Stark.
For Howard.
Yep.
It would totally.
And I assume that's what they're going to do.
Which I think is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm super excited for Madame Mask.
Well, and also not a super, like, she's not super well known villain overall.
No, not really.
But
I have an action figure of her.
folks who've been reading Marvel for a while are going to probably have come across her at some point.
Yep, she's got a gold mask. It's a cool look. I hope they.
I know her primarily from her from the first West Coast Avengers miniseries.
Yep.
Where she played a major role.
And I think most people now will remember her from the Fractions Hawkeye.
She's major.
She's a major player in that.
Yep.
And it's also cool for Agent Carter to get extended a couple episodes. Because it's a longer season this time.
Now, if only they would bring Agent Carter to Netflix. My daughter marathoned all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She would like to watch Agent Carter. But there's only 4 episodes on Hulu. The last 4. Not the first 4. So
why did they do that?
The rights are such that way. The Hulu doesn't have everything. I think basically they have the latest 5 episodes of a show.
Huh.
And so if you don't catch up on Hulu, you have to wait till it goes to Netflix.
No, I wouldn't be shocked that it's coming to Netflix pretty soon.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did. I'm sure that's part of the deal.
The second season went on Netflix really quickly.
ABC's content is such that it goes on Netflix Once Upon a Time and all that stuff. So just hasn't gotten there yet. Probably, a month or two before Agent Carter second season 2 hits.
Have they said when it's
No, but here? It's mid-season. It's going to be after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. starts back up in
September. Yeah. Or October, I'm not sure which.
I'm excited for that because they're doing the...
I am curious.
I like Daisy Johnson.
Yeah.
Whatever.
The Secret Warriors. Look. Yeah.
I love that they're doing Secret Warriors this season. I think that's really cool.
Secret Warriors being, of course, that Jonathan Hickman S.H.I.E.L.D. series.
There was one Ultimate Collection.
There's two now.
There's two because one comes out tomorrow.
Yep.
And so what's their adaptation of it for S.H.I.E.L.D. going to be?
It's a super-powered S.H.I.E.L.D. team.
I think they're going to jump some time, and she's going to have built up sort of a secret team that Coulson sort of is.
I think they're
going to
be mostly unknown characters or kind of obscure
Marvel
characters?
They may be the characters from Secret Warriors, because that was a super-powered team.
Were those all original characters?
It was like Baron Mordo's son. There were a couple... Like, Ares' son was on there, which I hope...
I think they won't use those guys, but they may use those code names.
Right.
You know, they probably won't be introducing major Marvel canon here, but... I don't know, Ares' son, I guess, isn't super far. Like, they're probably not going to use Ares in the Marvel movies.
I mean, great foil for Thor at some point.
But the thing is, like...
That'd be like Thor 7.
Yeah, they're introducing stuff like Asgardian thing. I bet it'll be son of someone from Asgard or something
probably.
Like that. So,
I'd imagine so.
We'll see. I'm curious to see where they go with it, though.
Because I know you weren't super fond of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last season.
I'm now having rewatched it with my daughter, I spot-watched whatever episode she was watching. I have determined that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a weak show that has occasional moments of good. So I am curious, but not excited. Also curious, but maybe not excited, is the news that Fox is angling for an X-Men TV show.
Right. Do you know the idea be to use the actual cast members?
I believe it's going to be a Generation X-y type thing.
It would make sense. They're probably not going to be able to pull in the money to... to be fair, the rules are very different from what they were in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I'm sure people don't even remember Generation X.
Yeah, well, and part of that was the special effects weren't up to it and all that kind of stuff.
You're going to want to look that up on YouTube and watch...
Wasn't there also a show called Mutant X?
Yes, there was, based on Howard Mackey's, but not based on... It was just called Mutant X. It wasn't actually based on the comic book Mutant X.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Oh, no, not so weird back then.
Hey, Mutant X.
We were not in what you call the golden age of comic book TV and movies back then.
We were in the Mantis age of comic book movies.
We were in the age back then where if the Fantastic Four movie that hit this weekend that everybody hates... not everybody, but everybody but 9% of people on Rotten Tomatoes, and one of our staffers hates that it probably would have gotten much warmer reception because the notion of being faithful.
Well, it's better than Spawn.
Yeah, the notion of being faithful to comics is a fairly new one.
I think it was great. It was this weekend, and my wife knows I love comic book movies. Yeah. And she's like, "Don't you want to go see the Fantastic Four movie?" I'm like. Dear God, no.
I've had several people ask me coming in the store, like, you see a Fantasy Four movie? And my response has been, God, no. No.
Well, I think the natural assumption is we see all the comic books.
Yeah.
Nope.
We are in an age
where we can choose not to see comic book movies because there's other comic book movies to see.
If it's at Redbox for $1 or maybe on HBO for free, I will watch it.
You will watch it at some point. Dave will watch it at some point. There is almost no way I'm ever seeing this movie.
Randy is standing his ground.
Yeah. No, I just don't want to waste 2 hours. I just don't want to waste 2 hours of my life on something I'm probably going to hate.
We'll face the ass.
If you both watch it and tell me that is actually pretty good, I'll watch it. But
I don't think it's likely for us to say that.
Jumping back to the X-Men show.
Yes. Well, it's related. So.
Right. I think that's could potentially be interesting. I like the Fox X-Men treatment in general.
Yeah.
There was, and I think. That they've said that they're not done with the FF. That's what they said, yep. Despite the bad box office and all that.
But I believe people have been saying, so let's go back to X-Men first.
Sure, because there is a direct link.
So the X-Men TV show, they want to do sort of a long-running TV show. And I could see this going for a while. You could add in new characters. You could bring in guest stars in the movie.
Yeah.
I think an X-Men would work well as a serialized TV show.
And this is just me hypothesizing, but you'd have to anchor it as sort of like the school. And
the school,
be
yeah.
Sort of...
And then, but
the
then
bare, the backbone.
I mean, just imagine this in a perfect world. They do the school season two or three. They have Cable show up and drag a bunch of them over to make X-Force, and it's X-Force versus X-Men. And you know, then you can have Apocalypse again. You know, on the small screen. There's all kinds of stuff you can do. The Morlock story,
right? You could do a half of a season where they travel to the days of future past, future.
Yeah.
And it's like all dark and scary.
You can do everything that Heroes did wrong and do it right.
Right. So it could potentially work out. Who knows?
But there is a hitch in that Fox has the rights to the movies, not the TV.
Correct.
So in order to make this TV show, they need Marvel's permission. And that one of the Fox guys is out there saying, we really want to do this. We just need to work it out with Marvel. And what's interesting timing on that is that was the week before Fantastic Four hit and bombed.
Right.
Now, someone over at Fox is saying, we're not done with Fantastic Four yet, you know. You know, we're gonna we still haven't seen it all, how it all is gonna shake out. We want to do some stuff with it. But my notion when I saw that article was, oh, I guess they're not giving it up. They're gonna stick with it. Maybe they'll do the X-Men FF crossover they were talking about. But some of my friends pointed out that nobody goes into a negotiation saying, ah, we're done with this. What do you want? You can have it.
Right.
So this may be posturing.
But the fan spec idea would be
that they go to Marvel and they say, we will sell you back the FF rights if you give us the rights to make an X-Men TV show.
Right. Which I think would be a win-win for everyone.
Everybody wins. FF goes back to Marvel Cinematic, where they would probably do a good one. And then X-Men's never going back to Marvel. The X-Men, they've figured out how to work the X-Men properties. And every time they make a movie, the option extends out like 7 more years. Right. So
Marvel has made very specific good movies.
Yeah.
Marvel is very specifically sort of counter-programmed or like rebuilt the Marvel universe so that it exists without the X-Men, and now the Inhumans do more or less plug that role.
Sure, but they would take X-Men back in a heartbeat.
They have clearly prepared as if it is they're never going
to
happen.
And I think that's smart on their part is not because basically the reason not to give them the rights to a TV show is spite.
Yeah.
Which. There is definitely spite going on. I mean, we know about all of the cancellations of FF.
But if they were able to get Fantastic Four back, I think that is a good deal.
And it also would be good for the comics because then maybe Perlmutter or whoever it is at the top of Marvel would calm the hell down about not letting the FF be drawn anywhere or included in their merchandising. Well,
and maybe put out some trade paperbacks of some of the best FF collections.
Those are all available.
Are they?
All the great FF stuff's available. All
right.
Simonson, Byrne, Wade, that stuff's all available.
Okay.
We just don't carry it because it doesn't sell. Because the FF, unfortunately, has never really sold that well, which is why the cancellation is not just a conspiracy.
We were talking the other day, Randy and I were talking the other day, and the last time I remember FF having, a real notable sales spike, I think, and I'm talking a serious sales spike, was Byrne's run.
Yeah.
Yes, there was a spike for Wade and stuff like that, and Simonson, but these were...
But they were mid-range sellers.
In depressed markets.
Yeah.
And so they really scarcely counted.
So, can we hypothesize a reason for that? Do you think that it's just...
I believe a family-oriented comic in the Marvel Universe has not been what fans wanted. Mm-hmm. They have, from the 80s onward, basically roughly corresponding with the last time they were popular... Just after they were popular in the early 80s, dark stuff started hitting Alan Moore, Frank Miller, and all that. And I think suddenly the Fantastic Four looked like dad's comics.
And I think Fantastic Four always, they're old people. They're goofy. They have goofy powers. They have goofy code names. They're older characters. They're family.
Say, The Incredibles was a very good, essentially, FF movie.
Yeah.
But The Incredibles, as it existed... would not be a particularly good fit for the Marvel Universe comics right now.
Nor would it sell that well in this market.
Right.
But I think the thing is, we see what Hickman tried to do and turn it into sort of a sci-fi adventure comic where it was much more hard sci-fi, and that also is a niche market.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't want to do that much sort of heavy thinking when they're reading their books.
My notion when we were talking about this the other day, Randy, is that if the Marvel Universe were to get them, one of the odd things is that in the comics, traditionally, they were part of the beginning of the Marvel Age, of the first heroes.
And so that'd be a big difference.
So now they would have to show up later. And I had the thought that, you play them as maybe, government-backed celebs because they have sort of celebrity superheroes. They want, they came up. Their powers came about as part of a scientific experiment. They chose to do good, and they're like, "Oh, we could market this. We could, And the FF maybe they themselves are kind of more about the exploration and having a normal sort of family life. But they, they see the value, or they're going to get help with controlling their powers for the government, and so they sort of wind up in an uneasy place where they're celebrities and trying to...
I definitely do it sort of a corporate thing. I do them outside governmental. So unlike the Avengers, that's a government organization, I'd have a corporation that ran them, and they'd be driving the marketing, and they're trying to make them a big marketable property.
Celebrity kind of thing?
Yeah, celebrity, absolutely.
There would be... People would be flooded with merchandise. People would be kind of another FF special on this morning talk show or whatever.
I also think a post-Ultron, whatever that European country was... Mm-hmm. You remember what it was called?
not Markovia.
No, whatever that one is. I think a post-Ultron Markovia is the perfect place to become Doom's Latveria. He becomes a charismatic leader who rebuilds the area with his own technology, right. And the people love him.
A little bit of the Hitler rebuilding Germany underpinnings.
I've seen a lot of people say, well, you know, they don't fit in the Marvel Universe anymore because they haven't done the early. And I'm like, no, a different version of them would fit beautifully.
Sure.
Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know if that's going to happen. Even if they get them back, the earliest we'll see them is 2020.
Right.
Yeah, because they've already got their films.
So they'll be well into Marvel's, you know, they'll be on the stage 13.
But just to have Dr. Doom, Reed Richards, the Silver Surfer, and the Thing. Galactus. Yeah, I mean, you really want that. I would love them to work out some kind of deal where the Silver Surfer can be in the Infinity Gauntlet movies.
That would be sweet.
That would make me so happy. Because you need that scene.
That scene is like one of the best scenes
ever. Well, if they get the rights, Infinity Gauntlet movie is a good ways out.
Yeah.
And all they need is this character.
Yep.
It's 2017
or 18. Yeah, it's a couple years. They've got time.
This deal would probably go through in the next year or so.
I think so. I think they're working. I think they're either working on it now or it's not going to happen.
Right. And of course, the X-Men FF thing, pure speculation.
Yep.
Who knows?
Yep. But anyway, that'll be interesting to see. And all that plays into how the X-Men TV series, like I say, ideally it's a win-win. We get an X-Men TV series, which is probably going to be good. We get a Fantastic Four movie and tied into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which will probably be good. Fox and Marvel both make money. Everybody's happy.
Yep.
Sounds good to me.
Yep. I don't think that's what will happen because we're not in a perfect world. But that's what I would like to see. Finally, a bit of TV news. We saw the teaser for HBO's Westworld.
Yeah.
Coming 2016.
Remake of a movie not many people, I bet, know about these days.
Yul Brynner was in it.
Was the one and only big star in it. Yeah. But this was an early 70s movie with a script by Michael Crichton.
Right.
Not sort of commonly known. And it was itself set in the future and sort of imagined a trio of amusement parks that used robots that were so completely lifelike, indistinguishable from people.
Right.
And one was Westworld. You would basically go and live in the Old West and sort of have some adventures. One was like Medieval World, self-explanatory, and Roman World. And of course, this movie was very much a precursor conceptually to Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Essentially, obviously, things go wrong. The safety features start going off on some of these robots. Yul Brynner basically becomes the Terminator before the Terminator was the Terminator.
Yep.
And is like super scary-ass robot chasing people around and killing people. I recommend the movie, but it is, you know, very dated, at least visually now. And so HBO looks like they're going to do a pretty big overhaul.
Yeah, the new one is an HBO show. It's just a 30-second teaser.
I mean, it is a very quick teaser.
They said series.
Yeah, it's a series.
It's going to be a finite series?
No, presumably. I mean, everything HBO does is finite, but I think they're aiming for many seasons.
Okay.
This is a concept you could definitely get a lot of seasons out of.
Right. Well, the original show, if it were to follow that exactly, it's not.
Yeah.
But they're clearly doing something else because that was things go wrong, will our heroes survive, essentially.
No, this is going to be more of an alternate history West, I think. They'll do a lot in the Wild West. I wouldn't be surprised if we, the viewer, don't even see the other part of the world until the end of the first episode. You know,
we also, when we were looking at it, we were guessing that maybe that the people who go to this theme park, it's possible they might not essentially know they're in a theme park.
Well,
like you would have to know, but maybe there's like some sort of selective memory suppression or something, so you could go in and really feel like
experience.
Well, because it's a voiceover where someone's talking to a girl, and then we see this girl in sort of a comatose state, plugged into a bunch of machines.
Right.
Clearly, she is in the Westworld. I assume it was virtual reality, but then you guys point out there's sort of a robot thing being formed, and maybe
what if they are projecting her mind into one of the robotic bodies?
Into a telepresence robot,
so then maybe
I think
some of the robots do actually have humans guiding them.
Well, there may not be any robots.
Yeah,
everybody may be plugged into Westworld
playing
a role. It's like essentially a big VR role-playing game.
Right.
And I think that's kind of cool. You're taking a movie that we like that had great concepts and adding in
updating technology
and moving things around, shuffling the board essentially.
Yep.
And
it's not as if HBO doesn't have a good track record.
Yep.
Oh, and they have great production values. This is going to have the teaser shows Anthony Hopkins.
Yep.
There's a few other people that I recognize as good character actors and actresses. So, I mean, I'm excited for this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I was bummed when the teaser came out and it was like 2016. And I guess that's only technically 5-6 months away. So.
Yeah, I mean,
You know,
we'll see it before we see the Infinity Gauntlet movie.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Truthfully, we have so much good television coming.
That's true.
Before
there's
then,
plenty to keep us occupied.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot to keep us occupied.
All right. Moving away from TV, but also staying on trailers, there was the Deadpool trailer released.
Mm-hmm.
The
hyper excited.
Yep.
There were two of them.
Yep, just, well, there's a red band and a green band.
Correct.
But as you know, Dave and I love Deadpool so much.
So much that it's like we've lapped our love of it
and
somehow
hate it.
Gone into hatred.
Yeah, it's weird.
Dave's never owned a Deadpool book. You've owned a whole...
Actually, that's not true.
Oh.
We were reading Deadpool at the same time. We were reading
Joe Kelly's X. Oh, no. I read the Joe Kelly stuff.
From Gail Simone.
Yeah.
I have read like an issue or two of...
Joe Kelly's Deadpool.
Joe Kelly's Deadpool. Yeah. By and large, sort of like, and none of the wacky heroes really do it for me.
Yeah.
I have in my time like She-Hulk.
Yep.
And,
yep.
Maybe a few other characters.
I have a fondness. I love the current Howard the Duck. I love the current Squirrel Girl. For whatever reason, Deadpool's brand of wacky does not sit well with
me.
It's
a particular brand of wacky, but it's also sort of mocking everything in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's a part of me that's like, okay, enough already.
Well, you know, Howard and Squirrel Girl both do that too.
It's a different kind of approach.
Yeah.
He is kind of like, I can't help but feel it's a little bit sneery.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little bit embarrassed about the superheroes thing, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, be that as it may...
People love Deadpool.
People love Deadpool. This movie's going to be a big hit. The trailer, I thought, was a little weak.
I agree.
Even on its own merits.
I agree. And the funny thing is, I have seen most people saying the trailer was good. You like the trailer, right, Nick?
I thought it was fine. I mean, it's not making me rush out and wanting to see it.
People on my Facebook feed were excited, like, this is the best trailer. And I finally got around to watching it. And not only did it not do anything for me, which kind of doesn't surprise me, I was kind of surprised that people really liked this because it's very sort of violent and dark. And there's the humor that's in it. There's not what I'd call a lot of humor. There's not a lot of him quipping so much. There's little bits.
There's a lot of quips in there. You can probably count a half a dozen at least. I think they all kind of missed the mark timing-wise.
I was expecting wackier. Mm. I was expecting a wackier vibe.
Yeah.
And not actually just me, maybe because of the editing of the trailer, because I actually thought the green band, they actually had a few more jokes and were actually a little bit more funnier.
Okay.
And maybe it's just going to be the collaboration of both of them, sort of get the violence and the humor. And I don't know.
I don't know. I was expecting something a little more along the lines of an R-rated Ant-Man, where it was going to be much funnier. And it's definitely... They go into sort of how he gets his powers and the origin stuff, which is, by the way, stop doing origins.
Fox doesn't know that.
To be fair, Deadpool has never gotten an origin in the comics, and it's the single most requested thing when people come in. They're like, which one has his origin?
Yeah.
And I'm like...
So maybe it's...
This may give the people precisely what they've wanted in the comics.
I feel like you don't need to see Deadpool before he's Deadpool. Like,
well,
maybe 5 minutes, you do 5 minutes of flashback and do the origin.
And like that may be what it is.
It doesn't look like it.
I feel like that's Hollywood.
Yeah.
And Ryan Reynolds is a handsome guy, and they want to show... They are going to do some serious stuff, clearly, and I think they want you to have some sympathy for him when they do the serious scenes. They want you to know, oh, this is a guy who loved his wife or fiancé or whatever she is.
Yeah.
And they want to show his face a little bit.
I feel like trying to give Deadpool pathos, that much pathos, is probably not a great idea. Although, that was the only thing I liked about Joe Kelly's, that Joe Kelly did Deadpool and had some pathos and some real emotion,
and
I liked it.
I always hear that about that. Like, the people
and
Jerry Dugan are always pointing.
Brian Posehn did that as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But also, I'll say this, the one thing I recognize as a Deadpool fan from the Joe Kelly run was Weasel.
Yep.
And I like that they recast her as a woman, and I thought she was fun. So that bit, I was like, that's a little neat. That's kind of like having Microchip in a Punisher show. It's a nice throwback.
And also we got to see Colossus, and that's always fun.
Yeah, and I assume Colossus is like working for the Russian mob here or something.
That would sort of make sense.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Clearly running, that'd be the Ultimate X-Men spin on.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, it's out there.
It's out there.
You'll love it.
And then, of course, there's our typical segment on musical theater. Which we always cover what's happening in the world of musical theater.
Have I missed that session?
No, it's every time.
Really?
Yeah, every time. Did you not?
I must have visited Westworld.
Let's talk about a new production of Oklahoma.
Let's talk about Adam McKay of Funny or Die and Anchorman doing an Archie musical.
All right.
That's weird.
That's a little weird.
That actually doesn't seem too weird to me. I mean, we saw it may have fallen apart, but they tried to make a Spider-Man musical recently.
Yeah.
So,
I think the actors fell apart on that.
I think their bones literally fell apart after they fell one too many times.
I could see it, and I think it'll be funny.
Yep.
I think Adam McKay, Talladega Nights, Anchorman, Funny or Die, he knows how to do that sort of sense. It's like if Adam Sandler were actually funny.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think the question I have is, what role is Will Ferrell going to play?
Archie.
Yeah, right.
He's going to be a teenage
him,
Archie.
He'll be Moose. I can see him being the principal or something like that. what's that, Weatherby.
Yeah.
Actually, my only question about this would be, will it be a sort of subversive thing, or is it going to be kind of sincere but lovingly hilarious? Or
I would guess that first thing, given what I know of McKay.
Yeah.
Although he does do, somewhat heartfelt on occasion, but his stuff is always a little subversive, so I bet closer to that.
Most
that
of his stuff actually doesn't hit home for me. I love the Anchorman series. Yeah. That is great.
All of his stuff, once I watch it once or twice, it usually wins me over. Like, Talladega Nights, I didn't love the first time, but I watched it again, and I'm like, oh, it's actually pretty funny. So
Do we put the Archie guys had to sign off on this, right?
I bet they pushed it.
Right, well, I'm saying, yeah, it's not that it wouldn't fit them, but it does mean that they signed off, and so a certain level of subversiveness, if it was just like scathingly mocking, they probably wouldn't green
light. I mean, they're trying everything. I mean, the guys at Archie are like, okay, let's do a Sharknado crossover. Let's do... Yep. I mean, they're really trying to change their brand a bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
So...
Finally, a couple things that came in the store this week. Just want to mention, there are new Reverse Flash rings.
Which are
super cool and have a component. They have a little compartment that opens. So if you have a super compressed costume that compresses with super gas, you can put it in there.
They don't have like a little mock costume or anything in there.
No, that'd be awesome.
Just checking.
That technology still beyond us.
DC is putting out some kind of neat props. They've got the Gotham badge.
Gotham City badge.
The ring.
Yeah. Yep. And then also this week, the Batman Flux came out, which is...
Oh, right.
It's a different flavor of Flux, which is always a fun party game. And this one is notable in that it has all the Batman stuff and uses the animated series iconography. So
yeah. And if you buy one, you get a, Clayface?
Yeah, for a limited time. Not Clayface, Two-Face.
No, I think it's Clayface.
Is it Clayface? Oh, okay.
That's why I think you were maybe confused.
I was confused, yes.
Yeah, no, there's a separate Clayface card.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty cool. Actually, I love that they're using the Batman animated series art.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic.
I looked through it this morning just to see, and it looks like a fun game. If you like Flux or you like Batman, and especially if you like both, definitely worth a look. All right, that wraps up our larger-than-usual news segment this week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, August 12th, and I have an unusual pick this week.
Do you?
Yes, I do. Okay. But first, we're going to go to Dave, who has our only number one pick this week.
Right. There were lots of good stuff this week. I've been enjoying my reading pile that I've gotten to so far. But Image has a new book called Beauty that hits today,
Today. Yeah. You know, unless you're right up there when we first post this, like in the middle of the night.
Tomorrow, yeah. This has an interesting concept behind it. It's a very approachable hook, and it's explained in fascinating clarity just within the first few pages. It's essentially a real world in the present where something has changed everything, though. There's an STD that has made the rounds, so to speak, and it has an unusual effect. Instead of some sort of debilitating illness, it physically transforms you into a more beautiful person.
Like a supermodel, basically.
Like a supermodel, yeah.
It says, fat melted away, thinning hair returned, skin blemishes faded, and their facial features slimmed.
Yeah. I do wonder, I'm like, how does that fit in with different standards of beauty around the world? But maybe that'll be something they'll even talk about in this. Or maybe, I mean, we certainly know what the standard looks like in America.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of supermodel or... famous actor or actress that are popular. But yes, and essentially, I guess this was one that probably many, all too many people were happy to catch.
Yep.
Obviously. But the book is sort of about all both the moral implications of, you know, what that would be like.
Yeah.
And what, you know, whether it's right to catch it, you should want to catch it. It does seem like it's accompanied mysteriously by a low-grade fever that's omnipresent but otherwise kind of harmless, or so it seems.
And it opens, I mean, this is not a spoiler, it's on the third page, with someone who has got the beauty sort of spontaneously combusting.
Right. Something occurs that is the subject of an investigation throughout the rest
story,
of the
story follows a pair of cops who are looking into it, and maybe there's a conspiracy going deeper into that.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
You also like just sort of the book sort of walks you through the strange world that they live in.
Yeah.
Where it does seem like there's pretty people on every corner, and they call them beauties.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you know, we've got a beauty related crime downtown.
Yeah.
Or we believe the perps were beauties.
I mean, there's a specific task force that the police only deal with those crimes.
Right. You know, there's always been the criticism that comic artists kind of draw every character as like too pretty, too handsome, or whatever.
Right.
I half wonder if this sort of somehow spun out of that idea. They're like, yeah, the artists are going to draw them all pretty anyway. let's make a reason behind
well,
it.
Well, it may have because the artist is the co-writer of the book and actually the originator of the book.
And very great artwork, by the way.
It's Jeremy Hahn, who you may have heard. He's been working in the industry for like 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And has done a lot of books that I've liked, but none that I can say, oh, you will have heard of him from this one.
Right.
I mean, he's worked at Marvel, he's worked at DC, he's worked a lot of Image.
I mean, the only book that really stands out of my mind, because I liked the concept, was, like, The Leading Man.
Yeah, The Leading Man, which was a spy book from Oni.
Yeah. Which I really found
that was fun. But yeah, it's been a little bit sort of under the radar otherwise. They're looking into sort of this conspiracy. There's seems to be like a possible subversive terrorist element going on. Somebody who may be targeting the beauties. Am I correct? Is that like it looked like it was a sex club that at one point the investigation?
Yeah, a beauty sex club.
Yeah, which appears to be. It looks like you buy beauties, presumably. There, like there's. The normal people, normal body types and facial types, who would buy time with the beauties. So this is not just kind of a quick throwaway idea. It's actually there's a lot of world building going on in it.
Yeah,
and an interesting, likable cast of characters, sort of in the first issue. It strikes me as like sort of an intriguing, like sort of low level sci-fi premise.
Yeah.
There's no flying cars or laser guns.
No, this is something I could easily see being adapted to like a television show, and it worked really, really well. I just like the fact that the main character, which is the lead detective, and sort of getting to explore the character not only through the crime, but you get to see his interactions with his wife. And I felt like he was a very well-rounded character.
I agree. Yeah.
That's not always an easy thing to do in a first issue, especially where you have to establish so much. And that was actually, by the way, something I wanted to quick touch on was this book kind of overtly jumps in with a narrative that fills you in on what's going on. And I sort of appreciated its bluntness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, I know you are Jonathan Hickman fan number one, but one of the things I find somewhat frustrating about Hickman is his sort of oblique approach to things.
Yeah.
Sometimes to the point where I'm like, well, I just read the issue and I don't know what's happening. This is kind of the polar opposite in the sense of just how quickly they lay it on the line.
Yeah, it's true.
And they're like, that's the basic premise, now let's get to the story involving the premise.
Right.
But there's so many facets to the story that they can explore, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how they do that.
It seems like, as a concept, it's perfectly made to explore sort of the beauty culture, and all of the... the ancillary things, fat shaming or anything like that, body modifications even. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They can do a lot of stuff with it.
Yep.
So, good first issue.
Yeah, me too. I'm curious to see where it goes.
We all quite liked it.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Nick, what was your pick this week?
Going back to Batman, because that is my pick for this week.
Now, you've been a little down on Batman last couple of issues.
I have. The last couple of issues have been okay.
Batman, more like
Crapman. Exactly. But when Snyder and Capullo came back after sort of Endgame, which ended with a pretty big thing, I was like, okay, you're having Gordon be Batman. It's not my favorite idea.
But there has been percolating in the background some stuff about Bruce and what happened to him.
Right.
And it seems like maybe it's starting to pay off.
He's shown up a few once or twice working in sort of a... Care Foundation set up by Lucius Fox and helping sort of the needy and poor. And I don't know. It just didn't resonate with me. I think their ideas were interesting. But again, this is Snyder.
You wanted
writing.
Less Batman in soup kitchens and more Batman beating up the Scarecrow.
Well, in some ways, I miss actually just Batman being Batman. With this Batman with Jim Gordon, it's a corporate run Batman. Right. So everything he does is sort of has a label there. He's being watched. So it's not right. really...
He's kind of got to go through normal police bureaucracy.
I mean, not even that. He has to go through corporate bureaucracy because he can't... He's not a cop anymore.
Is this not a police...
No, program? It is actually like the Powers Corporation that actually ate Wayne Industries. So this is sort of...
So wait, Powers is from Batman Beyond?
That is a thought, because that's what they haven't explained.
Well, because in Batman Beyond, I remember Derek Powers Corp bought Bruce Wayne. So.
Vaguely, but they certainly because of their what was the big miniseries they had with, that had Batman Beyond in it, that Azzarello and those guys were.
Future's End.
Future's End obviously had Batman Beyond coming into our time,
right?
And lots of sort of references to it. So they may be kind of bolstering the links to that.
But again, you know, this is Snyder, so. He's always has good ideas, and his execution is always on point. So, I mean, I was giving him a long length of rope, sort of just seeing if I could get back in. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot in this issue, which is issue number 43, that sort of snaps me back into the story. And I really appreciated that, mainly because we finally get an explanation of why Bruce is back and why he's doing what he's doing.
Do we want to say what it is?
I think that's sort of a spoiler. I don't want to get into
it. It's a pretty neat idea, though. Like, you guessed at it like a month or two back, next November, and it looks like you were pretty much right.
Well, I hoped that was going to be the case, because it's a story idea that we haven't seen before. Or if we have, it's been like an Elseworlds that has only been touched on.
Right.
And I think it is a really clever thing. How far they're going to run with it, I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting way. It offers an interesting way to explore the difference between the question that other people have done before, but the sort of what makes Batman.
Yeah, what makes obviously, Batman.
Obviously, Bruce does not seem to be able to be Batman right now. Gordon is struggling with it. And, you know, the question is, you know, must he be the precise product of...
Where's my man John Paul Valley to step up?
But Snyder's also does a really good job of creating good, you know, sub-characters, you know, people helping Batman. And Gordon actually has sort of an Alfred in Alfred's daughter, which is interesting that she's working with him, sort of guiding him and helping him.
Why would Alfred's daughter?
She's SAS.
Aside from being alive,
she's SAS.
A character
knows.
That exists at all.
She was SAS. Okay. She actually joined Batman sort of at the beginning of Endgame, and when something happened to Alfred, and she showed up.
When did Alfred have time to have a kid? He's been butlering for 90 years.
I don't know.
About 20 years ago, when you really love someone, you butler them.
Is there like a Rumspringa for butlers?
Sure.
Did he go off on Rumspringa and he was no longer a butler for like 3 months, and then he had a kid, and then he's like, I want to be a butler again. I want to read that. Where's Alfred, year one?
And then there's the introduction, which we've seen in the storyline, of a new villain called Mr. Bloom, which I actually have to... He gets the cover. He looks like a crazy sunflower guy.
Is his secret identity Milo Bloom from Bloom County? Well,
he looks like this gangly mime thing with like a sunflower on his mask.
Yeah. It is kind of this creepy visage of... he doesn't look like much. Uh-huh. But by the end of the thing, you kind of see what he's doing. He's basically handing out powers for free to people. Mm. So, like, amping people up, amping gangs and crime lords up a little bit with... these sort of sunflower chips that amplify powers. It's an interesting idea, and I have to congratulate them for coming up with a new villain, because too few people do that.
None of the stuff that's going on, although it's exploring some themes that have been explored before, plot-wise, I can't say, oh, that old plot...
Yeah.
That old plot where Gordon wears a robot Batman suit. That old plot where Bruce Wayne breaks away from Batman to work in a soup kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They have been doing Batman for a long time. To be able to do something new, whether or not I'm reading it, is pretty impressive.
And there are some guest stars in here, notably Clark Kent. He shows up, which is really cool.
Yeah, right now, Clark Kent and Bruce are both sort of non-Batman and Superman.
Yeah, that's true. They're a bit out of their roles.
Why does Wonder Woman get to keep her powers? What's that about?
Miss Entry?
I have no idea. And then I think I might be the only one at the table. I just think Greg Capullo gets better and better. And I think
you're the only one at the table.
Yeah, that's actually fine.
But you're hardly the only person in the shop, because a lot of people really like Greg Capullo's stuff.
I just think he's really has sort of made a name for himself, and he's changed up his style enough that I can really see the detail and the thought he puts into every panel.
I would agree that he's getting better. I don't know if he's ever going to be an artist who particularly falls onto my map.
Yeah,
but I do think he's been improving.
And the colorist, and I'm going to blank on this guy's name, so Sinclair. I'll have to look at it. Danny Mickey does the inks, and then FCD Placentia or whatever. It must be a couple.
A placenta. To the, color.
The colors are so vivid, and they add so much to the story.
Is this the coloring that sort of seemed to still mimic some of the jaundiced look of Killing Joke?
Yeah, I mean, just still in the bright sort of hues and things.
It's sort of a modern approach to kind of retro colors. There is sort of an acidic look to that.
It really makes a statement, and I think it punctuates the action scenes, which I was very...
Is there a reason why Alfred has three devil horns?
That was not Alfred. That was a gang leader.
Okay, because it looked like Alfred.
I know. That is not Alfred.
Okay.
is a gang leader. I see. That is part of, like, I forget the gang's name, but, you know.
I just thought maybe you were leaving out something very important.
No, I am leaving out something very important.
No, sir. I've got a daughter, and I'm a gang leader with three horns.
No, but I'm really, really enjoying it. I think it was a great issue that brought me back into this story. So I highly recommend checking it out.
All right.
Should we mention your
crazy
genre
pick?
Or concept breaking?
Yes,
pick?
We've
what
picked
is
trades.
The comic that you
picked? We've picked trades before.
Have we?
Yes.
I don't know.
Have we?
I thought I was discouraged from it at some point.
We have.
I don't know
anyway,
if I believe you.
Anyway,
you have one you like.
Yes, because I'm picking the Black Panther, the complete collection by Christopher Priest, Volume 1. This is to me the definitive Black Panther. I think this is better than any other Black Panther that's been done, and include the origination of the character.
Originally coming out
in 1990s. It was
like,
in the
like
part of the Marvel Knights.
Early...
Yep. Late 90s.
Okay.
Christopher Priest writing. You might know as Jim Owsley from the 80s. He changed his name because when he got divorced, he said if he ever got divorced, he'd become a priest. So when he got divorced, he changed his name to Christopher Priest. The beginning art is sort of a painted style from Mark Teixeira. It's very nice.
Yeah.
And then as it goes on, they change artists. I believe they brought in sort of an animated style in Mike Manley, which is pretty cool. And then toward the end, it's more of the, again, more traditional with Sal Velluto, I think.
So I have a question.
Joe Jusco, actually.
What makes this the definitive version?
Okay, so this is a great – so basically – There's an interview up on Newsarama right now. I'll try and link that too. By my friend Zach Smith. He's talking to Christopher Priest, who has been out of comics for a while.
Yeah.
And they're talking about sort of what he was doing. He was approached by them. He's a black writer, and he didn't want to just do the black characters. But when they did the Marvel Knights, Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada approached Priest because they knew him, and he said, "I was excited because I was thinking Daredevil," and then they told me Black Panther, and my heart kind of sank. And then he started looking into it, and he was talking about how Don McGregor in the 70s sort of made Black Panther kind of a generic hero, and the Priest had always seen Black Panther as kind of the black guy who hangs out at the back of the Avengers. You know?
Right.
But that when Kirby had done him originally, he was like a king, and it was a big deal. So he very much brought in he brought in a character called Everett Ross, who he describes as sort of his Matthew Perry type, basically. He's the whitest man on earth. He's a diplomatic attaché. He works in the State Department. And something happens that leads T'Challa to come to America – to investigate something that's going on with the foundation he funds.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy Ross is assigned as his handler, and he's kind of a jackass and kind of a goofy guy,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't understand Black Panther, who comes with this huge entourage of characters, you know, including his bodyguard, a couple of girls who are his betrothed. Basically, they're sort of badass Wakandan Amazon type girls,
right, sort of bodyguards betrothed,
and he comes here to deal with that. Meanwhile, there's stuff going on back in his country that involves sort of racial tension, mm-hmm. Tribal tension, that kind of thing.
There was always I've read some of this, and there was always this sort of percolating political backdrop.
Yes.
To
so
it.
This has a political element. It has the superhero elements. It's got a sort of a crime vibe to it. And then Mephisto's in it, too.
Yeah, I was flipping through it. I'm like, is that Mephisto?
Yeah.
What is he
yeah.
doing in a Black Panther comic?
Yeah. It also does the crazy sort of Tarantino-esque jumping around in time thing.
Right.
That was not Priest's original idea. It's just something he was doing on another book, and Palmiotti and Quesada liked it. So they rejected his first script and were like, no, we want the Pulp Fiction on steroids thing. So the out-of-sequence storyline may put some people off. I really love it, and I found Ross's narration to cover for a lot of any sort of storytelling glitches. But yeah, it's just it's a very ambitious book that treats Black Panther as a king as well as a superhero.
He was, if I recall, it's not that he doesn't. He certainly isn't infallible in this. But he kind of, Priest might have elevated him a little bit more in the style of like sort of Grant Morrison's Batman, where he was pretty uber. He was a pretty boss hero, well, Priest, like a hero king, essentially.
Priest talks about in the interview how to him it's like everybody gets so hung up on the race thing they forget to think that basically this is Marvel's Batman, that he could easily be Marvel's Batman. He's got all the gadgets. He's got the smarts. He's got the abilities. He's got the money. Yeah. So to him, he was writing it as if this were Marvel's Batman.
Right.
But as Batman, we're king of an African nation. Which is another wrinkle. It's really good. It's really good stuff. This is one of their big trades. So it's like $35, but it contains 17 issues of comics. So that's a pretty good deal.
I guess Marvel's releasing this because getting people ready
for the Black Panther movie. Yes, and because. People come in all the time looking for Black Panther traits, and there's nothing.
Yep, it's true. And nothing now except for this great run.
Yes, and finally they're collecting what, to me again, is the definitive run on Black Panther. And I really love this book. And if you're at all a fan of the character or curious about him, this is a great place to jump in. Now we move on to cheater picks.
Yeah.
My cheater pick this week is Descender number 6 from Image.
Final issue
of the first story arc.
Yep.
They are going on a 3-month hiatus in the typical Image style.
Do we know how many story arcs they're going to be?
We don't.
But maybe 2, 3, yeah. 4, who knows?
So this is issue 6 of Descender. We've talked about this before. This is the science fiction story about robots and a robot extermination and a little companion robot
who's sort of being pursued.
Yeah, a science team looking into the history of robotics and looking for a connection between this little boy robot and what happened to the galaxy.
Yep.
It's got a little bit of Mass Effect vibe, and then it's a big far-flung alien races, all and that kind of stuff.
Visually, it has a rather stunning look.
And visually, it's beautiful. Dustin Nguyen art. So this is a great conclusion. It flashes back a little bit to the origins of their roboticist, who's like the biggest roboticist in the universe.
Big questions are answered.
A new faction is introduced at the tail end that sort of turns things on its head. And leads into a nice little cliffhanger ending. This is going to be out in a couple months, or I think in like a month, as a $10 trade from Image. So if you haven't been reading it, definitely pick up the trade. This was a great read.
Yeah.
Nick, your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is a Secret Wars book.
Well, it's Secret Wars. You don't like Secret Wars.
No, I hate it. No, but this is actually the finale to Master of Kung Fu.
Yep.
The fourth issue.
It reveal who the Master of Kung Fu is?
It does indeed who the Master of Kung Fu is.
Spoiler warning, it's Shang-Chi.
I mean, he's right there on the cover. No, but I was kind of curious as to how they were going to handle sort of an ending for a Secret Wars book.
Right.
Is this our first ending?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's our first ending. And it's actually, very just story-oriented. So I'm kind of...
So it didn't have something to do with, like, the meta plot about Doom?
It does not.
Doom does not show up at the end and go... Never again! And
now,
wipes everything out.
Now Doom is Master of Kung Fu.
It actually just ends in sort of what the story foretold as Shang-Chi versus his father.
Okay.
And I actually was really happy with the resolution.
Out of curiosity, did this exist 100% separately? Or is it, say, Doom mentioned?
I mean, other than them cursing, in Doom's name, sort of, that's still what I mean. But yeah, it is. It's got a few references here and there.
Yep.
But for its own, it lives on its own. And I love the art. I thought Hayden Blackman did a great job with the story. I like seeing all the different sort of houses. If you have not read Immortal Iron Fist, which this is a very much a riff on, you should, because it is an amazing series. I was just very pleased with how this turned out. And,
cool.
Because Shang-Chi's awesome, and he should be used more often.
And he is the Master of Kung Fu.
He is the Master of
Kung Fu. It says right in the title.
Spoilers.
Dave?
My cheater pick is issue number 3 of Constantine the Hellblazer.
So who's the Hellblazer?
Constantine.
Oh, spoilers.
Right there in the goddamn title.
I'm getting these spoilers. I'm not used to them.
Anyway, I have actually been intrigued. This was a sort of a stealth... a success for me for the DC post-convergence relaunches. I kind of came in, I guess, around when it was hitting issue 2. I read caught up on the first one. I've been really enjoying it. This is a somewhat of a re-envisioned Constantine. He feels a little younger to me, which is sort of status quo for convergence.
And they're sort of reshaping his backstory a little bit, even as he's, in many ways, the Constantine you know. He's a bastard. He's an egotist. He's likely to get you killed if you're his friend.
Right.
But he's a sort of tarnished white hat. The backstory stuff that they're changing, though, this would be a perfect example in this issue. You flash back to his early days, and he's like at a concert.
And he finds a magic ring.
At a concert where there is a occult performers, including like an actual like demon on stage. And he and his friends get into it, and they're like, you know, we could do this.
Yeah.
And that's it's a sort of a spin on what, you know, in the traditional Hellblazer stuff, which, you know, was being written in the mid and late 80s, Constantine was supposed to have been a punk rocker in the 70s.
Yeah.
But as we get further and further from the 70s,
it doesn't work, right.
That was his backstory sounds more and more wrong.
So they updated it with something modern, like a carnival.
What is it, carnival?
Carnival's not really particularly new. I mean, isn't carnival sort of on its way out? Is it
carnival?
Didn't you say carnival? Oh no, it's a stage act. And when you said got someone up on stage,
I said a concert.
Concert. You said concert. That makes more sense.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Well, you were talking about like so there's an actual demon, and I was picturing sort of this oddball show kind of thing.
No, there's a rock.
Randy, oh, okay. She's talking about carnival.
Yeah, no, it's like being like it's essentially a club, but like a big club.
Okay, all right.
And of course, you know, he's in there trying to pick up a chick. And this is the new very bisexual John Constantine, but he's chasing after a girl in this one, and that will end up having this story alternates with the present where there's consequences of that. There's a new character introduced who she's also from his past. She's not that particular girl, but she seems to be somebody who maybe not only is a match for him, but is sort of. Kind of got it more together. She's sort of more professional about her dealings with magic, where he's kind of like this layabout who plays at it, and he's a con artist. Yeah, and so they're an interesting pair together. There's some good friction between them. They're not ex. I don't think they're ex-lovers or anything like that in this. But they ran in the same crowd.
I have to ask: is Chaz there?
Is America's cabbie friend?
Has he ever shown up in the new series?
Let's see. Is that Chaz? I can't remember if Chaz is now a guy who used. Is that the guy who used? No, that's Gaz.
ballpark.
So he's another one. And Gaz is like a guy who at some point was also his boyfriend.
I'm curious, does this feel like the Vertigo run a little, or does it feel more like the DC run? Like, which would you say is the tone of it?
I didn't read a ton of the DC run, so okay. It's hard for me to say.
But does it have the tone of the Vertigo, or is it still a little lighter than that?
I guess it's a little bit lighter than that.
Okay.
It's not quite as R-rated, but it does have some of that sophistication. It's more than you would think. Kind of, you assume that the sort of New 52 thing would be a little more poppy.
Yeah.
It is a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's sort of, I feel like it's slightly sort of hipper in the same sense of like, I would imagine the same people that might be liking Wicked and Divine.
Okay.
Or even like the Loki book kind of getting into this.
Yeah.
They brought a little bit more sexiness to him. You know, you see him at the club back in these days, and instead of looking like some kind of,
Sting.
Kind of like I'm going to say like an or sort of a punk rocker dude.
Yeah,
he's kind of a little bit. He's a bit of a hottie.
Okay,
and he knows it though, and he's full of himself, and you can tell he's set in for a fall.
Okay,
but yeah, he's walking around with like his you know jacket unbuttoned and no shirt, and he knows he's hot.
I'm very impressed with the art.
And the art's fantastic. I don't know. I forget
there's
who it
two
was.
Different artists in here. Ming Doyle is doing some of the art.
Oh, nice.
And then Vanessa Del Rey, which...
Okay, all right.
But, yeah, maybe the flashbacks are one of them, probably.
Because in the first two, it was Riley Rosmo.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so they changed artists.
I haven't seen any bad art at all on this. I really like
it. I may have to give this a look. You've piqued my curiosity.
Yep. So, anyway, that's my cheetah pick.
All right. Just so you guys know, I don't know who the Descender is. It's not in the title.
They did not explain.
They don't explain who the Descender is.
So the robot boy didn't turn around and said, I am Descender.
He never says, I am Descender. So, I still don't know who
maybe
the Descender
later
is.
Series.
Yeah, maybe so. Okay. So, other stuff this week. Velvet is back. The spy book from Brubaker and Epting over at Image.
There's a new arc.
I was just the other day wondering, what happened to Velvet? And here it is. Number 11, and it's the start of a new story arc, which introduces an American spy, and is great. I loved it. Howard the Duck number 5 finishes off that pre-Secret Wars run, so it can lead into its new number 1. There is an homage to that famous Infinity Gauntlet moment in here, which I thought was kind of fun. The stealing the gauntlet with Silver Surfer.
Oh, right.
There's an homage in here, which is kind of funny. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, same thing. Number 8 finishes its run before it gets a new number 1 in a few months. involves Asgard, Loki, Thor's. Kind of fun. It dropped off a little bit there from the end, but it does introduce Cat Thor. So there's that. Star Wars Lando number 2. We all talked about Lando last week where they did the big heist. This is the immediate aftermath of that heist when the Imperials have taken interest.
I enjoyed this issue.
I did too. It's not the same heights as that last issue, which was such a big surprise, but it's a solid, fun issue.
There's some pretty cool stuff, including a cool battle standoff sort of thing with some Star Destroyers.
And then Secret Wars 2099 number 4, which I've been going up and down on that book, but this was a really fun issue of that. And then A-Force number 3, another Secret Wars book, which, again, some cool stuff. There's conspiracy stuff going on in the background. I haven't loved this book, but I'm definitely liking it. The Star Trek Green Lantern number 2, I was kind of surprised how much I liked this. Like, this was almost my pick this week.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the first issue, multiple lantern rings from different lantern factions were activated, essentially.
Yep.
And they were not seeking their seeking a bearer. And in this issue, you see all the payoff from that, and it seems like once that happens, that's when they really get to start having fun.
Yeah, this has
Who would represent, you know, avarice or fear or hate in the Star Trek universe?
They open with a Green Lantern powering the Enterprise with his ring, because the Yellow Lantern ring is powering a Klingon bird of prey.
Yeah, and then there's just, like, lots of cool, fun stuff from there.
There's fun stuff like that. You also see who gets a Red Lantern ring.
You never thought you'd see
it. Indigo.
Yeah, you see who gets a Red Lantern ring, you see who gets an Orange Lantern ring, and you see who gets an Indigo Lantern ring, and they're all good picks.
My favorite one was the Red Lantern ring.
Me too, and I don't want to give it away, but
it's someone you don't get to see too often.
No, but it's...
And it's fun.
It's perfect, yeah. and then, of course, it's a great last page stinger. So I am very much on board this book. I was sort of lukewarm on the first one. I thought it was good, but not great. Mm-hmm. But after the second issue, I want to see where they go with this. So really enjoy it. And finally, Volume 3 of Alex plus Ada... The conclusion of the artificial intelligence story that we've talked about so much before that we all really liked ends very strong, so definitely worth picking up.
And I need to read those stories.
Nick, what else is on your stack?
Lots and lots of Secret Wars.
Sure,
books.
Yep.
I mean, that it really dominates my pile, and I'm happy because there's some pretty great stuff, along with the fourth issue of Planet Hulk.
Yep.
The sort of... out of nowhere surprise hit for me, the Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde. This is just so much fun. Our traditional Star-Lord, the Age of Apocalypse, Kitty Pryde, sort of fighting Gambit. They're sort of competing thieves, and it's just a lot of fun. Also, Battle World, which sees two different stories starring the Silver Surfer.
One of which has art by James Stokoe, by the way,
yes.
So that's worth noting.
An Egyptian Silver Surfer.
Oh,
very
that's
cool. Inhumans, Attilan Rising, which we kind of get to the heart of the matter and see exactly what Black Bolt was trying to do.
Yep.
Very cool stuff. Ghost Racers, the third issue of that.
Yep.
And then, of course, the fifth issue of Secret Wars itself hits this week, which answers some questions. I still really enjoy it, but I'm Hickman fan number one, as Dave has professed.
Yeah, right.
So, that is all of mine.
Dave, anything notable on your stack beyond
that? Did anybody mention Bombshells yet?
Nope.
We should mention DC Comics Bombshells, their comic that spun out of their merchandising line for DC Direct, which was the sort of pin-up girls done in sort of a... somewhere between, well, essentially a 40s style.
Yeah. This is World War II, all the men are off at war, and so the girls picked up superheroing as well.
Yep.
And
this is three sort of vignettes in it. There's Batwoman, Wonder Woman, and a variant of Power Girl, as a tying into, because there's a surprising amount of history in here. There's like the Night Witches.
I thought that was kind of cool.
The all-female bomber squad from Russia's history in World War II. So this is kind of fun if you're looking for like some... if you just like the concept, if you like the looks of them. Yeah,
the art is great.
The art is great. And it's kind of cool to see some sort of an adventuresome 40s era book.
Yep.
There's also, what was this one? This is the one from...
Scott Collins' new Dark Horse book.
Yeah, Adam 3. This is the weird sideways book. It is printed in the unusual horizontal format. I haven't read it yet, but I always like Collins' art. And do you guys know what the premise is?
No.
It looks like some kind of like John Carter or Tarzanish kind of.
Yeah, I think it's very Kirby-esque.
Okay, that makes sense.
There's a couple issues of I've been enjoying the Superman stuff for the most part. So there's a Batman Superman and an Action Comics I'll read.
I feel
this
like
week.
I need to catch up on that. Unfortunately, it's all a lot of it's out of print, so I need to wait for a trade.
Yeah, should be something before too long. Dark Horse has a new book called King Tiger, which
martial artsy type stuff.
Sort of looks like martial arts futurism with like laser swords and stuff. But really, Doug Wheatley's artwork may be the biggest draw on that.
Yep.
For sure, flip through it if only to check the artwork out. And lastly, there is a new issue of Alan Moore's Providence. I haven't read it yet since those are kind of dense reads.
Yeah.
But I'm otherwise caught up, so I'm going to try and read it this week. I've been enjoying that book, which is a slow burn kind of unnerving horror thing, and looks to kind of move to an Innsmouth-related story in here.
Nice.
So, classic Lovecraftian locale.
All right. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about some TV and books and video games and all kinds of other stuff. We begin this segment with breaking news.
That's right. While we pause for just a moment, of course...
Dave checked his phone.
I checked my phone because that's what we do nowadays.
Yep.
Even if you're an old person who didn't have phones back in the day.
Yep.
So apparently...
Matt Ryan,
who played Constantine on Constantine, which got canceled
on NBC,
will recur as the character on Arrow. There was a campaign, and yep. It actually somehow happened.
Well, Amell was behind it too.
Yeah,
Steve Amell was pushing for
really
it. Yeah.
Championed it.
So yeah,
seems like such a good guy.
There was going to show up on like.
He wanted to show up on Constantine and try to help it. Yeah. It's only one episode cameo at this point, but they do specifically mention like, oh, you know, characters have shown up more than once. And so wouldn't it be hilarious if it becomes so popular that they spin it off into a CW Constantine show?
That would be the craziest thing
yeah.
ever. I mean, NBC would probably be kicking them. So.
I've seen crazier things happen.
Yeah. Would it be overall a better fit for CW?
Yes, absolutely it would.
I mean, it's the same company
Supernatural.
That did Supernatural.
Yeah. You do a Supernatural Constantine crossover.
Oh, that is so awesome.
That would be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's...
See, like, crossovers are happening really weird. I mean, not for more news, but I saw that they're doing a crossover with Bones and Sleepy Hollow.
That's weird. It's
that
weird
is the
as hell.
Weirdest crossover yeah. I've ever heard of.
That is super weird.
But again, on the topic.
That's like the Aliens, Mindhunter, Witchblade.
I just
yes,
saw that, and
yes.
I'm like, that can't be supernaturalism and
that's
Bones?
Really weird. It's
for a,
really
for a
weird.
One-off story, you know, bit, a gimmick.
Yeah. It's just that used to be the purview of comics. TV didn't tend to do that kind of thing.
True.
But we're seeing more and more of it.
Yeah, we're seeing more of it. Comics has infected every other medium. Both movies and TV. Movies are doing shared universes, and TV is doing more crossover stuff.
So what do they call it when they have like the crossover fanfic or whatever? Maybe they just call it crossovers.
Yeah.
But that's a big thing in fanfiction,
yeah.
of course. It's like, you know, here's my Doctor Who Picard romance and
yep.
yeah.
all of that stuff.
Yep.
But now it's infected the mainstream.
Yep.
This isn't season 14 of Doctor Who, don't worry.
All right. So first of all, a video game which Dave played many, many moons ago when it first came out.
Right.
And Nick and I are playing now because it is on the PlayStation Plus for free this month.
I just want a quick shout out to PlayStation Plus. They've put some really good games lately.
I had Xbox Live for a long
yeah.
time, and it was never worth it.
No.
It was
a waste.
You had to have it in order to use like HBO Now or HBO Go
and
Netflix and all. And I did.
I used it just to play with my friends, like
yeah,
online.
Sure, but having to pay in a monthly fee just for what Xbox Live gave you was really obnoxious.
It was.
PlayStation 4 came along, and they did make the PlayStation Network. You had to pay to play multiplayer again.
Well, and PS3 did it as well.
Yeah, no, PS3 you didn't. You could play for free.
Oh, it was play for free.
Yeah,
but if you did that, you got the games because
yes.
I know PS3 does there.
Yes,
right.
But so
get the games.
When the PlayStation 4 started, you had to buy the PlayStation Plus to actually play online now.
Right.
But the thing you get is you get a free game every month. Actually, you get like three
yeah.
free games every month.
And they're actually delivering them.
Like, yeah. And fun. Last month was Rocket League Soccer, which I loved, and Nick has started playing.
Yeah, you basically Facebooking like, did you download it?
I'm like, you have one more day. Go download it.
I didn't. And you're like, download it. And so
yeah.
I did. And I'm loving it. I think it's a blast.
Yeah.
It's a simple game. But it's one of those ones that's just fun to play.
Yeah. Well, I got that. I got Counter-Spy. There's a Tomb Raider game this month.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of free games I've gotten. And Aaron, my son, has played Tower of Guns, which came out from them. And all kinds of... Basically, every month there's a game that I get that either I like or he likes or both.
Yeah. Including the very game.
Including the very game we were just about to talk about, which is Limbo.
Yeah,
which is a very simple sort of side-scrolling puzzle type game.
It is.
Yeah,
you are a little. It's presumed dead child.
Yep.
It's a silhouette kind of.
Right. It uses a unique visual style where the backgrounds are sort of rendered in this soft,
shadowy
style. But yeah, you yourself and I guess all of the threats and stuff are rendered as hard silhouettes. But we still have a lot of sort of personality to their movement
style. And you sort of go, and there's things like you have to avoid these big bear traps that are on the ground and
it's
find
a macabre game.
Oh yeah,
you die constantly.
And the dive thing, you get impaled on spikes and stuff like that. And there's
it's very Tim Burton.
Or Charles Adams.
I love the visual design of it, though. Yeah. It's so striking and so unique.
I have a walkthrough on my computer, and basically if I get stuck for more than about 10 minutes, I'm like, all right, how do I get past this puzzle? Because I don't want to spend hours getting frustrated.
But the interesting thing was...
I think there's something... And I understand that completely, because getting frustrated...
That's the way I play it.
There are games that I get frustrated with. Yeah. Like I'm playing Batman Arkham Knight right now, and I'm at the point I'm at, I'm super frustrated because it's just freaking annoying. But for puzzle games like Limbo, and I think... like Braid, years ago, I kind of want to solve it. I want to figure it out.
And I understand that. I understand that impulse.
Limbo is one of those ones where I remember a few times... I think I solved that one without any backup. But it was sort of at a time when I had a little bit more free time at the moment. And it always seemed like whenever I got the answer, it was very satisfying because I was like, oh, right, it makes so much sense now that I see it.
Well, I was annoyed because I'd completely forgotten about the little brain bugs in Limbo.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, must walk the other way. And then I'm like, oh, there's a box. I can stop myself from walking.
Yeah.
And I felt like satisfied that I had figured such a simple thing out. And, it is that. And
generally, the puzzles are not super... They're sort of surprisingly difficult at times, but usually almost everything you need is right there on the screen, maybe with some slight backdrop.
And when we talk about puzzles, it is very much you have to push a box so you can get high enough to jump to the next level,
right.
Or there's a spider that shows up, and you have to figure out how to get past it without... You don't have weapons to kill it.
Right.
So you have to figure out how to get it to sort of hurt itself so it'll run off.
That spider sequence, by the way, the... finale with that particular giant spider, which is very creepy, by the way.
Oh, is that the finale?
It's gross. Have you dealt with the spider?
I have dealt with the spider.
Okay. That sequence was, I believe, and sort of maybe some of the stuff leading up to it, was, I believe, the demo for the game.
Oh, okay.
And I think or maybe that's where the demo ended.
Yeah.
But I know I played that as a demo, and I was like, all right, I'm buying this.
Yeah, that was creepy.
It was gross, but awesome.
Yeah. I also love the simplicity of the game, because it's essentially two buttons. There's a jump button, and then there's
an interact button.
And that's why the puzzles are so relatively simple. It's like there's not a whole lot of things you can do, so it's just a matter of,
There's levers and switches and stuff where you have to activate things a certain time. There's ropes you have to swing on or climb up, and there's gears you have to avoid. It's got this sort of interesting. You're definitely in limbo. It's like an afterlife kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a part where you go and it's sort of more urbanized. Like there's the flashing electric hotel sign.
Yeah. Right. It does feel like Tim Burton's stop motion movies.
Yeah.
If he were to try and depict a creepy afterlife.
Yeah. I would say I'm probably about 75% of the way through it, and I'm really digging it.
I'll be curious to know what y'all think of the ending, because there is a sort of decided sort of element, a story element to it. It's not like an extended cutscene or anything, because that game doesn't really do that. But it was interesting.
Nick,
so.
Have you run into the other children yet?
Yeah.
Because that's creepy. It's like this Lost Boys thing. They seem to have, they've got spears, and they've got mechanical things they've worked up, and it's like they have been here longer than you,
and they're like...
They're hostile.
What's the famous novel?
Oh, Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like some little Lord of the Flies limbo kids.
And there's no dialogue or anything. This is all from mood and visuals.
Right. But you encounter their little fort or something that. And so you do get these suggestions of story, which I think is a really neat way to do it.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's free if you have PlayStation Plus and PS4. Definitely worth a download. Gentlemen, I have a confession to make.
What?
I've been watching reality TV.
Oh, I know about this, Randy. I know your secrets.
I watch reality TV, too.
But you have a wife and she makes you do it. That's different. This is totally of my own will.
Okay. I will compare reality television because there are actually food ones that I love.
Well, that was the thing. Top Chef was like my marijuana that led me to the heroin that I'm currently watching.
Cutthroat Kitchen is my new obsession.
And I haven't watched Cutthroat Kitchen. So I watched Top Chef because a friend liked it, and I started getting into it. Now I've watched 4 seasons, and I'll probably, if I ever have a slow time on TV, go back through Hulu that I have now and watch all the old ones I've never seen. But I have a fondness for dance, and I have a huge fondness for stand-up comedy. And so I started watching randomly. When I got Hulu Plus, I started sort of looking through what was there. And the newest season of So You Think You Can Dance just started. And this season is called Stage versus Street. It is a team of stage dancers who are sort of modern ballet, tap, all that kind of thing. And street dancers who do more of the animation and b-boy and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And they do – and they basically – they have, I think, 10 of each was how they started off.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the first, like, three episodes that are all auditions in, like – I think that's in Los Angeles and New York. And I might say I'm in Dallas. And so people come from all over. And and it's kind of fun. They basically – you get all these – they do sort of the stories of the dancers. There was one who – like, she was in a car accident when she was a kid, and she almost lost her leg, and she's had, like, 13 surgeries on her leg. Ooh. And now she was dancing on it, and it was kind of amazing. There are people, you know, who come from all kinds of poverty. There are people – there was a couple that got – that met in line and were now getting married. There's all kinds of little drama stuff. And so when they go through, it's actually a very sort of affirming kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a very sort of welcoming environment. Their judging panel is Jason Derulo, who's a rapper and dancer, Paula Abdul, who's a famous singer-dancer, sure. And then the executive producer, Nigel something, I don't remember his last name, who's sort of the head of the show, a nice British guy.
Yep.
And there is no what I would say, who's the British guy from The
X Factor? Simon
Cowell. There's no Simon Cowell. There's no guy who's
here to
beat them down, yeah. When they say mean things to them, and they do, you know, say mean things, they always feel bad about it. They're like, I'm sorry, you know, you seem very, you're obviously put a lot of life into it, but you're not at the level you need to be for the show, that kind of thing.
Right.
And when they are effusive, they are very effusive. And
that's cool.
And then they go
it
on.
It seems like something that is a particularly jerky thing to try and bring people down.
Yeah.
Is Paula Abdul's animated cat made an appearance?
No, but there is definitely a MC Scat Cat reference. There was one girl who tried out, and her dad was the one who had brought her there, and they made the poor dad get up and dance. On stage, she's like, she's like, her dad had sewed the costume for her and everything, and she's like, is your dad a dance dad? And she's like, he's totally a dance dad. And they got him up on stage, and they asked, like, what music, and he was like in his 40s, and he's like, I guess, like, Paula Abdul. So they played a Paula Abdul song, and he had to sort of freeform dance upstage, which was kind of funny. And I believe he was like, he's like, thanks for nothing, honey. to his daughter.
So is there usually a theme to every season?
This is new. This is the first season I've watched.
Okay.
So I don't know. The street versus stage thing is new. But what they do is, once they get past the auditions, they've got 20 people. They bring them to Vegas, and every week they eliminate two. There's voting on Twitter, and you text in votes and all that kind of stuff to say, and then the judges get to save one person at the end. But every week, two dancers are eliminated. They're sort of the low end on votes. And every week they get a series of choreographers that come in and take two or three of the people, some from stage, some from street, and make them do a routine. And the routine may be street, may be stage. So everybody's having to sort of cross-learn techniques. And they found this amazing animator who reminds me, she looks like Alison Pill if she were Czechoslovakian.
Okay.
And she does this amazing animation. She's got such control over her body. It's like this robot-type stuff. But then she's turned out to be this amazing dancer. And then there's like hip hop dancers there's a tap dancer who named Gabby, who's just become great at all these different styles. And they bring in these people, the choreographers, who do everything from sort of a modern routine to a jazz routine to a hip hop routine. And then at the beginning, they do a big routine with all the stage dancers and all the street dancers. And they do the same at the end. And it's just, there's just a lot of cool dance moves and a lot of cool costuming and lighting and all that kind of stuff. If you have any fondness for sort of Broadway and that kind of stuff, or, you know, music videos.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun and entertaining, and it's become one that as soon as it pops up on Hulu, I watch it. And that led me to realizing I love stand-up comedy. I assumed that NBC couldn't possibly be producing a good show, but the newest season of Last Comic Standing, which my parents watched and have talked about, and I guess Amy Schumer won one of the rounds of that a few years back. And their panel of judges is a very slimmed down, very blonde Roseanne.
Oh, okay.
Which is really weird.
Roseanne
Barr. And then Keenan Ivory Wayans, who you don't think is super funny, but he is the guy who discovered a lot of talent. Like, he discovered Jim Carrey. He discovered,
right.
You know. And then their new judge is Norm MacDonald, the famous SNL guy, who's very much the crusty old man of the bunch. He is the Simon Cowell. He says the mean things.
Yeah. Norm MacDonald, is he the one who kind of has seen a sort of a little appreciative rise in the last 10 years? It seems like
seems like he's gotten some second wind.
I believe he's one of these comedians.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're the panel. They bring up people. They're doing the invitational rounds now where they get a bunch of comedians who come up. They do like 3-minute sets. It's really rapid fire. And then the judges sort of decide which people will move on to the actual show. Mm-hmm. And so far, they cut this more interesting, like, so You Think You Can Dance in a lot of shows, they will just show you all the really awful people.
Yeah.
This one, they cut bits and pieces of the people who aren't going to make it. They give them like 30 seconds of their routine,
right,
just to sort of sprinkle it in there. But they show you like the 10 people who are going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see their routines and how the judges react. There's a lot of really good stand-up comedy there.
Yeah.
I've laughed through a lot of these routines. There's people who get in, they really get in and get out, and they do their strongest material. I don't know what the show's going to look like. I haven't seen beyond the sort of audition segment of it. But if you like stand-up comedy, it is definitely worth watching. I'm curious to see where this goes from here. Nick, you were gonna mention your cooking shows.
Oh, the one I just absolutely love is Cutthroat Kitchen.
It's
become sort of my the one I look forward to every Sunday night because I kind of get to revel in the evil a little bit because Alton Brown, who I think has been a phenomenal TV guy.
Alton Brown's a great host.
He's one of those just is very charismatic and so knowledgeable about food just in general. I follow him on like Facebook and Twitter, and he just throws out just random things.
Yeah.
But Cutthroat Kitchen is where he gets to be a little evil. They have four contestants who come on, and he basically gives them a dish that he wants. Like, it could be anything from, you know, a waffle, like your version of a waffle,
right,
or your version of biscuits and gravy,
right,
or, you know, make me a grilled cheese. And then you're given 60 seconds to go through his sort of
big old kitchen thing, right?
Yeah, basically where you can get all your ingredients. And he, if you are not out of that place in 60 seconds, he gets to close the door on you. And it rarely ever happens, but he loves it when he gets to...
So then they're done? They're stuck?
No. He gets to take one item from their basket so that he deems them to not use. It is very, very fun.
So last time... He might take, say, the cheese.
Exactly. Last time, he caught all four of his contestants. And he was just like... This has made my day.
Now, is this also the one where the contestants get to sort of bid on budget?
Yes,
kind of
basically that's the start of it. And then they come back to their stations, and then there's an auction.
Uh-huh.
They're each given $25,000.
Yep.
And little challenges are auctioned off. And when I say little, it could be your entire prep station is taken away, and you have to prep your station while sitting in a small... the last time, people had to basically work together in giant bread loaf skis. So two people had to, or no, it was three people working on one in one thing, and you had to sort of, they had to work in this concession while the other person who won the auction got to do their, whatever their thing is. Sometimes they'll take away their utensils and supplement them for, say, cheese knives, or someone had to make soup in a, I forgot what it was. It was, like, a spigot or something. And that's how the person had to actually cook soup in a spoon. That's their only utensil that they could cook in.
Jarek told me a little bit about this show a few weeks back.
Yeah.
And he described, it was clearly one of these scenarios. He said somebody had to make an omelet on a pan that was flipped over.
And some of them is like a pan that actually has the center cut out, so you just have the edge. And you have to figure out how to do it.
That's crazy.
Someone actually had to cook soup in a kitchen sink that actually had the hole in the middle of the kitchen sink. It's just one of these random things that whatever devious thing Alton Brown can come up with, he's had where their tools are giant size.
Yeah.
So you have like these knives and forks on the ends of long poles.
But you're sort of buying this, instead of buying an ingredient, you buy this and throw it at your competitor,
yes,
right?
Yes, you're hosing your other competitors.
Yeah.
And then they get, you know, a person who critiques the dish and sort of chooses who goes on, because Alton doesn't. He's just there to MC it and sort of walk around and sort of occasionally make fun of them or be like, oh my God, why are you doing that? You can do this. It's so much easier. and I love all the people they get on the show to sort of... Simon Majumdar, who is a really big chef that's... big and everything, and they've gotten a few other people, like Giada De Laurentiis was on there at one point because, you know, you know, Judd is a friend of Alton's. And I don't know, it's just a lot of fun. And I think it is great. This week, actually, they're about to do the Camp Cutthroat, which is outside. And he gets to make it rain on his contestants. Also, he takes a giant leaf blower and puts it in front of people and knocks all their... And when I say a leaf blower, I'm actually talking an industrial leaf blower. Industrial fan that's just knocking everything
over. Kind of like Hunger Games stuff.
It is hilarious. And I'm excited for this week because I get an additional cutthroat on Wednesday.
Nice. Dave,
I don't watch no reality TV.
No, you're in dino mode.
All right, I'm in dino mode. I don't even know how that happened.
You can't fight it.
It wasn't dino from mode. Lost World.
Nope.
Because that didn't activate my dino mode.
Yep.
But maybe it was percolating it. Lost World.
Jurassic World.
I was like, oh.
Right. Lost World was the subtitle of the second Jurassic World.
Correct.
Right. So for this, I have been playing the old PlayStation 1 game, Dino Crisis.
Yep, sure.
Which, actually, that might have been what triggered it, even. It showed up as a super cheap game, $3 on the PS3 store.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, the thing was, just a few weeks prior, I had been talking about it with my brother and saying, I kind of like that game. It was Resident Evil with dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
From the Resident Evil people and everything.
Yep.
And some fun wrinkles like, you know, raptors who open doors and stuff like that. But overall, it had that kind of scarce ammo and fear factor of Resident Evil. And I was like, I'd kind of like to finish that one day. I guess I never will. Well, and then it turned up and I had to. I also reread Jurassic Park and something else with dinosaurs. I forget what it was. Oh, I actually played a little bit of the Telltale game, Jurassic Park.
Right.
Jurassic Park game. Which was, from what I understand, somewhat lukewarmly received as compared to their big breakout immediately afterwards.
Walking Dead. Right.
But what I played, I actually quite enjoyed. It was a little more twitch controls, like there was more sort of dodge the dinosaur attack scene.
Yeah.
But it was felt very much like the Jurassic Park movie. It had a neat premise. You know the people that Nedry was supposed to meet up with on the docks and get the
InGen.
The Ember. No, InGen was Hammond's team.
Oh, was it?
They were the rival team. I forget what their name was.
It was another company.
Yeah, but they were the rivals to InGen.
Ah, okay.
But he never showed up at the docks. Of course.
Yeah.
You begin on the docks with a character he's kind of a skeevy, you know, company man kind of guy who's. Waiting to make the handoff and pay, I guess, Nedry.
They always alluded to a person being on the boat. Yep. They said, I think even Nedry's like, and if your guy on the boat is all he says he is.
The guy on the boat was there. Nedry was dead. He's got a guide who's who you play in the opening sequence. She's clearly like a native from like the South American mainland or something like that. And kind of a badass. She's got a machete. She's sort of a guide type personality. And seems a little bit skeeved out by what's going on, but she also is looking for a paycheck.
Yep.
And you play her part in some of the opening sequence, and eventually she gets in trouble, and you also play a guy who's just one of the other sort of like, kind of like park rangers, who, while the events of Jurassic Park are continuing to go on, like the fences are down, what's going on with that? Well, if you've seen the movie, you know exactly what's going on, but these characters are kind of, they're split off from the main group. And it's a guy whose daughter was there visiting, so there's a little bit of that kid factor of the Jurassic Park movies. But it's kind of a dark story. I've seen that daughter get killed in several sequences. And
as dark as Limbo?
Yeah. But a little more realistic. The chick who was sort of the guide, she gets injured early on. In the opening sequence, by the way, I'm just playing through like the first, you know, you buy it in chapters.
Sure,
It delivers. You get the Dilophosaurs. In the opening sequence. She gets injured, I think, by a raptor, but I think that one is kind of off camera. There's a very dramatic chase sequence through the jungle, which is really cool with her. But she gets a bad injury on it, like, you know, shears her forearm really badly. And then the other character's story intersects with hers, and you kind of have to try and get her back going. And you're, like, doing, like, little sort of mini games where you're trying to get her, like, her wound clean and an injection into it, you know, so that she doesn't go into shock. And
I guess the wound cleaning minigame, a standard of so many.
So it's got a bit of toughness to it. And then there's a Triceratops sequence that was really cool, where there's like a young Triceratops who's gotten out of his cage, and you need to move him, but you have to figure out what it will take to get him to move. This is shortly followed by the appearance of the full-grown mother Triceratops, which after dealing with the smaller one, you're like, oh my god, this thing is a monster. And, of course, it's the opening scene. There's got to be a T-Rex in it.
Yep.
And anyway, it is very Jurassic Park-y. And even though I would say, like, sometimes those Twitch portions, like, I was failing a lot. And it'll allow you to fail a few times, but if you fail enough, of course, your character's going to get maimed or something. But it just, like Limbo, it just rewinds you to the beginning of the scene, and you can try it again. But I feel like the story and the voice acting are pretty good. A few weak spots, but pretty good.
Okay.
And then the other thing is I reread Jurassic Park, and that was a lot of fun.
Finally, we have, we've talked about deck building, the DC deck building game over and over and over again, but we recently played the Street Fighter version.
Yeah, which I had picked up some months ago, but I had just not gotten around to playing. I sort of bought it while I was sort of in a Street Fighter mood.
Sure, when you were street fighting.
Yeah, that was in my street fighting days of early 2015.
Yep,
Dave dresses up as M. Bison.
Dave was learning his Hadoukens.
And then we finally got around to playing the DC game, and these all use the Cerberus engine, as they call it, and are all very similar superficially.
So we all knew the mechanics, basically.
We knew the mechanics. The DC deck building game is a ton of fun. And this one has a few tweaked elements, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it felt like Street Fighter. I mean, we were noticing, we were trying to figure out which came first. We still don't really know, but I almost feel like Street Fighter could have been the basis, because the whole things of the cards that are punches and kicks and that kind of stuff.
Right,
and
those are the baseline cards you get to begin the game with and sort of start building your deck. Makes so much sense with Street Fighter. A little bit weirder with superheroes.
But not super weird.
Right, like if it was just Batman, it would make sense.
Isn't there a Lord of the Rings version? Do they have punches and kicks?
No.
They do not, but they have the exact... The cards are essentially the same conceptually, but it uses, like, courage
and valor,
or something like that as the upper thing. Because that's sort of the commodities of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I thought one of the fun things about the Street Fighter game is that you pick, just like in DC, you pick a hero.
Yes.
And your hero is, one of the fighters. So I had
Ryu or Bison.
I had Balrog, and you had...
I had Guile.
You had Guile, and I remember who Jericho
Chun-Li
had.
Chun-Li was Amanda.
That's right, Chun-Li.
And Jarek was... and Dan played the... Oh,
E-Honda? E-Honda, right.
And Jarek was the Russian guy.
Yes, Jarek was Zangief.
Yes,
and,
just because you're a bad guy does not mean you're a bad guy.
The cool thing about this is everybody gets a super cool power that's like your punch and counterattack and all that stuff, and it goes underneath your character card, and then you have to buy it the first round. Like, you have to when you get a little bit to go, and then it goes into your max, and then you have to use it over and over again.
It's like you got to train up to get to your really cool
power. You got to train up to get your super cool power, and then it's in the mix. But you also, every card has a counterattack that when you play that card, you do something to somebody else. Like, I was playing Balrog, and when I counterattack somebody with my card, they got weakness.
Balrog, the big boxer guy.
Yeah, they got weakness cards, which is basically like I was punching them so hard I was stunning them.
Yep.
And the way it works is when you, instead of defeating supervillains, you defeat locations. When you take a location, you pull one of the character cards that is not in play, and you fight that character.
Oh, very cool.
Right, so you're never going to inadvertently face yourself. It's only going to be whatever characters aren't being used in play.
So we fought M. Bison, we fought Vega, we fought Vega.
Fei Long, the Bruce Lee guy. It's also, one of the neat things in the game is also that there's more confrontations with other players.
Yes, it's a lot more attacky.
In the DC game, you would periodically turn up a card that would sort of attack everybody.
Yeah, like the supervillains do that.
But in this, you can gang up.
Yeah.
And y'all did gang up on poor Jerry.
Did poor Jarek? Well, Jarek was looking like the winner, so we started
like
beating him.
Right, and that's just the way this game works. Yeah. You got to go into it knowing that's the deal.
Well, what's funny is after that, I knew that I had some cards that I knew were going to give me big points at the end.
Yeah,
I didn't know if you guys knew, so I was really nervous that at any moment what we had just done to Jarek was going to get turned on me. But it did not.
Now, one of the neat things is that there's lots of attacks and there's lots of counter attacks.
Yeah.
So this was a really cool thing. At one point, you as Balrog attacked E-Honda.
Yep.
And you guys had like three or four attacks and counter attacks. Y'all just kept playing cards.
Yep.
And it was like an extended like battle between you, which was really cool.
Yep.
The game, this doesn't occur in the DC game, and it's just kind of a fun wrinkle.
Yeah, it has the flavor of Street Fighter, just the way the DC game does. And it's weird because it's almost exactly the same engine, but they tweaked it just enough where it feels. And I'm guessing the Lord of the Rings is going to be the same way, that it feels like Lord of the Rings, even though it's still the same system. But that's what – it's kind of cool. You can learn any one of these games, and then you can play any of the rest of them pretty easily.
Yeah, all you need to learn is a tweak or two.
Yeah, so definitely recommended.
Very cool. And of course, the Street Fighter game is indeed available for purchase.
Yep. All right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. When next you hear our voices, it will be the 75th episode.
And our voices will ring with beautiful music.
Our voices will be the same, but it'll be the 75th episode. And until that time, Yo-Jo! And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.